You ever feel like your life, your family, your world is a soap opera? Come on. Come on. I'm going to ask one more time before I get mean. How many of you feel like at times your life, your family is a soap opera? Okay. For the rest of you, I'll give you a word. You're phony. This is the biggest problem we have working with non-Christians. If they could see, if all of our non-Christian friends, our non-believing friends, if they could see us sitting here raising our hands saying, yes, my life is a mess. I wake up some mornings and say, are you kidding me? If this were a soap opera, nobody would believe it. Every one of us has been there, but our non-Christian friends look at us and they go, oh man, I couldn't go to church. I couldn't be a Christian because I could never be as good as they are. Are you kidding me, right? You know yourself? You know your family? Of course you do. You know that's crazy. Listen, soap operas are everywhere. It may be your marriage. It might be your marriage falling apart. It might be a divorce situation. It might be your singleness. It might be a disease. It might be grief. It might be drugs. It could be your children, your grandchildren, your mom, your dad. But everybody's got a soap opera playing on, going on. And it's crazy. And I'm not suggesting that we go, hey, can I tell you how bad my life is? Maybe you'll want Jesus. But I think if we're just honest with people, let me tell you the conversation I had this week. A friend of mine called me. He's an accountability partner. And he called me, and when the conversation started with tears, now, I have a hard time when women start crying, I immediately find another woman and say, here, cry with them, and then get back to me. But when men start crying, this is not good. And this friend of mine started crying over the phone, and he said, Joe, I don't want to tell you, but we're accountability partners, I got to tell you. And he started sobbing, and I just sat there and listened. And he poured out what he had done. And I listened to him for quite a while, didn't say a word. And when he got finished, he goes, well, that's it. And I said, so you're surprised that you're human? And he, now it's his turn to be quiet. He goes, well, what do you mean? I said, I knew you were human. You seem surprised by that fact. Because he thought I was going to unload on him. And isn't that what we usually do with people when they're struggling? Because we forget our own soap operas, don't we? We forget the lives that we've lived and the mess that we've lived in. And I talk to a few people, you know, they'll tell me, no, I never had any of that stuff in my life. Okay, one of two things. You're a liar or you've become very old. Because I had these conversations with my dad. I say, Dad, what's going on? Nothing. State of Missouri, Dad, there's not one thing going on. Nope, things are really quiet. If you only go to Burger King and watch the Westerns on TV, things are fairly quiet. He's right. But the soap opera is playing out all around us. And one of our biggest struggles is that we're not being real with people. And again, I'm not saying you have to tell them every horrible thing you've done. But what works against us is when we look down at people when they have problems, like we would never have a problem like that. Come on. The book of Ruth. That's what we're going to look at today. If you're a visitor, let me explain. We're going through a book called The Story. It's kind of a novel form of the book of the whole Bible, just kind of hitting the highlights. And we're in chapter 9. If you want one of those, they're $5 out in the lobby. We'll get you one. But if you're in your Bibles, it's just the book of Ruth, and it's just four chapters. It's 2 pages probably is all that's there. But I began to ask myself this week as I was preparing, why is the book of Ruth in the Bible? There must be a million stories that could have gone in there. This story happens 1070 B.C. It fits right in during the period of the judges that we talked about last week. Samson and Gideon. Remember those guys? It fits in right there. But there must have been a million stories playing out during this time period. Why in the world does God put in His eternal book the story of Ruth? It's crazy. You know what it is? It's a soap opera. Let me tell you the story. There's a man and woman that get married. They live in Bethlehem. Perhaps you've heard of that little village. But there is bad economy in Bethlehem 3,070 years ago. There's no jobs, there's no money, and there's a huge famine going on. So they decide we need to cross the river and go into the land of Moab. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. But it's just on the other side of the Jordan River. Because on the other side of the Jordan River, there's a lot of food. Wheat harvest was going well. Barley harvest is good. So they go across the river. While they're over there, they move into a new house over there. And they've got two little boys. The boys grow up and they get married. Now their names are Kilion and Chilion. You can look it up. I didn't make things up. But the words, the names of their boys actually mean weak one and the small one. So does that tell you anything? All right. So we've already got economic problems. We've got health problems. We've got boy problems. We've got starvation problems. They go to Moab and the boys grow up and they get married. They marry two pretty girls from Moab. Over a period of time, the husband dies, and then both of the boys die. This is all in chapter 1. And it says that Ruth, one of the daughter-in-laws, was talking to Naomi, the mother-in-law. And she said, well, you might as well go back home. I got nothing else to offer you. There's no more boys. All of the men are dead. We're going to just struggle and barely survive as widows. You go back to your family. And then you read in verse 16 of chapter 1, maybe the greatest verse there that we use it for weddings, but it has nothing to do with weddings. It says, Ruth says to her mother-in-law, where you go, I'll go. Where you stay, I'll stay. Your God will be my God. And your people will be my people. Where you die, I will die. What a passage. But here's what I want you to see. That in the middle of the soap opera, in the middle of the sick kids, in the middle of grief, in the middle of economic disaster, in the middle of all of this, Naomi has still imparted her God to her daughter-in-law. That's been a priority. Of course, she said, no, I'm not going back to my gods. I am going to stay with you because you have the living God. So in chapter 2, they move back across the river into Bethlehem. Now you need to understand, she's a Moabitess. Ruth is not going to be liked by the people in Israel. In fact, she's going to be heavily persecuted. I'll explain that to you in a minute. But it doesn't matter, because she's made a commitment to her God. And she's not going to change that. They end up running into a cousin named Boaz. They use a word in the book of Ruth called kinsman redeemer. Okay? In Missouri, we call them kinfolk. All right? Same idea. It's a cousin. It's a cousin. That's what's going on here. And the cousin has a right to come in and buy basically the family's land, the family's house, and to take responsibility even for the women. And so Boaz comes into the picture. Long story short, chapter 4, Boaz and Ruth get married and they have a boy named Obed. The word Obed means one who worships God. And then it ends in a strange way. The book ends with a genealogy. It says that Boaz's grandfather was this, and his father was this, and then he had a boy named Obed, and then he had a son named Jesse, and then Jesse had a son named David, who we know as King David. That genealogy continues in Matthew chapter 1, and you see that ultimately that same line leads us to Jesus. So I ask you again, why is this story in the Bible? It's a soap opera. It's a mess is what it is. Could it be that God put that in there to say to all of us, I know your lives are a soap opera. Everybody's life is a soap opera. That's why I sent my son Jesus into the world to be the final answer. At the end of all of your, not to say, look, I got it all figured out and now I'm fine. No. In the middle of my soap opera, Jesus came and died to set you and me free. Isn't that the whole message? Isn't that the point of the gospel? Listen, there was a, if you're from Texas, no offense, but you know, people from Texas have a, well, they have an attitude about being Texans. And they always think that they're a little better than everybody else, right? All right. Is there anybody from Texas that I'm just, so I know I'm who I'm directly offending? Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. So there were some people from Texas that came to Missouri, and the Missouri guy wanted to impress him. So he's like, how am I going to impress this guy from Texas? So he takes him to Fulton, Missouri, and he shows him St. Mary's Church. We happen to have a picture of St. Mary's Church here. It was built in London over 400 years ago. It went through the great fire in London, and they literally moved the church brick by brick, put it on a boat, over 7,000 blocks. They numbered them, brought the church building to Fulton, put it back together. So the Texan looked at that, and he said, well, tell me the story about that. He said, well, the guy from Missouri said it took 5 years and 1,000 workers to put that thing together. The Texan said, we could have done that with 500 guys in 2 years. So he thought, well, I'll try again. So he took him down to St. Louis, and he took him to the Kiel Opera House, one of the most impressive places in the city of St. Louis. Gorgeous inside, great architecture, just an incredible place. And the Texan looked at it, looked all around, and he said, tell me the story of this. He said, well, it took 500 guys 2.5 years to build this. He said, in Texas, 100 guys, about 6 months, we could have put that thing together. Missouri guy just shakes his head. He's biting his tongue. So he takes him down on the Mississippi, and they go for a walk down by the river. And as they're walking along, they come around the corner, and there's the Gateway Arch. And the Texan looks at him, and he said, so what's that? The guy from Missouri said, I don't know. It wasn't there yesterday. Listen, is that usable, Steve? Listen, it doesn't matter who you are. Somebody's always going to try to make you feel bad about your soap opera. And they're going to say something stupid like this. Well, if you were together with God, you wouldn't have those health problems. If you were a Christian like I am, you would not have these marriage problems. Now, I have a lot of words that I could share with you, but the court said I can't say any of them from the stage. Listen, it's foolishness. You can't let people say that to you. I have people come up to me and tell me, Joe, let me tell you why you have leukemia. You know what? You don't have a clue why I have leukemia. If God didn't tell me, I'm almost certain He didn't tell you. But isn't it amazing how arrogant people get? Oh, man, if you were right with God, your children wouldn't be screwed up. Really? Because didn't we just all admit that all of our lives are a soap opera? And don't do that to people. No wonder we've got people that are going, you know what, if this is what it is, I'm out of here. Because we're not being real. When you read the book of Ruth, man, it's a mess. I didn't even tell you the best part. Remember they cross over into Moab, right? Here's what's cool. If you do it today, you can do this. If you're in Bethlehem today, Bethlehem is just mostly rocks, all right? There's some sheep wandering around eating what little grass there is. But then you come to the desert, and there's nothing. It looks like you're on the moon. Then you cross the Jordan River, and as soon as you cross the Jordan it's Jordan today, the nation of Jordan, but into the land that was Moab, you walk immediately into nothing but golden wheat fields, as far as the eye can see. So this is like God's just confirming, you know, what's already there. But who are the people of Moab? See, these are the kind of things that keep me up at night. All right, you go back to Genesis chapter 19. Does anybody remember the story of Sodom and Gomorrah? Okay. And there was a guy named Lot, who was Abraham's nephew. And Lot is the guy that's going to get out, right? God's going to destroy everything with fire and sulfur, which He does. Wipes out all those cities, which we've found, by the way. And Lot is the last one to leave, and he doesn't want to leave. Angels literally pick him up and carry him out of the city. Lot, his wife, and his two daughters. Everybody with me? If not, Genesis 19. You can check it out. But on the way, Lot's wife looked back and she became a pillar of salt. That's what it says. All right. So the angel takes Lot to a cave. All right. Now this is, we're talking almost, what, 4,000, 4,200 years ago. There's Lot's cave. It's still there. It's ironically called Lot's cave. But anyway, Lot goes here. This is where the story goes south. Lot has an incestuous relationship with both of his daughters. One of those relationships produces a boy named Moab. He moves on the eastern side of the Jordan River. All right. Does that make the soap opera just a little more crazy for you? All right. There is nothing pretty in this book. All right. We've got just about every sin you can possibly imagine wrapped up in this story. And yet God put it in the book for us. Why? To remind us that in the middle of our soap opera, that Jesus stepped into that to say, I will love you anyway, and I will forgive you anyway. Let's be honest. If God wanted to destroy Moab, he could have done it. Am I right? Listen, here's why they go to Moab. Moab is well, the biggest city you would know if I were talking about it today would be the city of Petra. Any Indiana Jones fans in here? All right. Petra is sitting in the middle of the land of Moab. Okay. And they have the money because Moab is on what's called the King's Highway. When you're traveling the trade route from China, from India, you're going to the Mediterranean, you're going to Egypt, things are going back and forth. Everything has to go through Moab. So guess who makes all the money? The people in Moab. They don't make anything. They don't produce anything. All they have to do is tax everything that runs back and forth. Pretty simple. You want to know why they left Bethlehem and went to Moab? Because they knew they could make a living there. So when we get to this point where Ruth is ready and Naomi says, just go back home. Just go back home. Things would have been easy had Ruth gone back home. Ruth would have gone back to economic security. She would have gone back to her family. She would have gone back to a good life instead of going to Bethlehem where they're going to persecute her for not being Jewish, where she's going to be a widow and possibly starve. There's all kinds of crazy things. But let me tell you the real kicker here. The one thing about Moab is that Moab worshiped a god named Chemosh, C-H-E-M-O-S-H. The word Chemosh means the destroyer. Now, can you imagine that being your God? Who do you pray to? The one who destroys me. If you read John 8, Jesus will tell you who the destroyer is. He gives that word as one of the names for Satan himself. So she's grown up worshiping a God who hates them. And he demands child sacrifice. So when Ruth says, no, I'm not going back, she's making an incredible statement. She's saying, no, despite all that might be in front of me, if I go this way, I'm not going back to that. Listen, there's times when you and I have to be honest. It's tough to be a Christian. I'm not sure if I can push on. I'm not sure I can keep believing. Let me ask you this. What are you going to go back to? Think about the life you came from. Is that where you're going? Is that where you're going to go back to? Rich and Verena Tetley, great members in the church. They were here last night with their little daughter. And 2 years ago, their daughter was born. Well, 2 years ago, they found out they were pregnant. Everything was going normally. And then they found out the baby was a little small and they had some tests. But the baby's born and immediately went into all kinds of problems. This little girl's had more heart surgeries than you can imagine. They were explaining pieces and parts to me that I've never heard of. For 18 months, they were either in ICU at the hospital or they were in lockdown in their house for fear of any kind of infection. And they called churches for prayer, elders for prayer. We went through this whole process and they will talk to you about the soap opera that they lived. In fact, it's about a 45-minute interview that we're going to put up online just to help everybody process it. But here's just a little part of that interview.
When we found out about the heart, Verena was still pregnant. We filled out a prayer request on the connection card. And it just started getting an army of people praying, as many people as we could. We started a Caring Bridge site, and people were signing up for it. They were getting their churches to pray, and we were getting messages from complete strangers just telling us that they were praying for us and praying for the baby, which is an amazing thing. We've all heard it said that you know, we're God's feet and hands. And I believe that more than ever now because of the way that God's family, our Christian family, reached out to us and really were God's feet and hands. They were there to comfort us, and they prayed with us. And
There were a lot of days where it felt like the day and the night just ran together. There was no end to it. Just being in and out of the hospital, there's no windows. You lose all sense of time. We felt very alone a lot of the time, and faith was a real struggle because everything was so hard. And those nights when we would sit and just pray, I felt God was there with us. And sometimes God was all that we had. God was all that I had to hold on to. There was nothing else that could get us through.
Listen, I don't know what your soap opera looks like, but if I could take you through the book of Ruth, it would be this. First of all, we all go through crisis. Every one of us is in a soap opera of one kind or another. In fact, aren't there times when you go, you know what, if I could just have a day, how about an hour? Could I have an hour without some soap opera event playing out? You get that call from your wife or your husband, and it goes like this. You don't even get a hello. You get, you're not going to believe this one. You ever had that conversation? Yeah. You're like, you think, if I could just get through one day without a phone call like that. You have no idea what I just found out. Let me tell you this one. You're like, oh my gosh. The truth is, as long as we're human, and we are, we have to admit the fact that we're going to go through stuff. And our kids are going to make crazy choices. We're going to make crazy choices. There's times when we get into this mess and you're like, how did I get here? I didn't sign up to be in a soap opera. I tried to do things right. Yeah, but I did make that one choice. Listen, that doesn't mean that you're bad. It means that you're human. It means that you and I desperately need Jesus. And I don't know whether yours is self-induced or somebody's abused you or neglected you or you feel lonely or you feel set aside by somebody or it's financial. It could be any multitude of things. But when you're honest and say, you know what? We're all living in the middle of some kind of a soap opera. It makes you and me so real for people around us. Because there are people that are thinking, you know what? They look at you and they go, oh, man, if I could just be like them. And you're sitting there, if they only knew. If they only knew what's going on inside of me, then I'm crying out to the same God that they so desperately need. The truth is, we all go through crisis. But number two, as you saw Rich and Verena share, is the fact that God never left them. Now, I can't tell you, though, this is the hardest part, is while sometimes God says yes here on earth and sometimes he says yes later. But I will tell you this, when you get the person that comes up beside you and says, let me tell you why this is happening in your life, you need to run. All right? Because they're going to come to you under the fact that they are the most spiritual people in the world. They did it to Job. Let me tell you what Job said to them in chapter 12. When his wise counselors came to him to explain to him why all the bad things said. It's one of the greatest sarcastic lines in all of history. Job says, you obviously are the wisest man ever, and wisdom will die with you. Listen, I don't know. All I do know about Ruth is I know how the story ends. And when you get to chapter 4, and Ruth and Boaz get married, they have that baby boy. And there's a verse in chapter 4 that says Grandma, Naomi, is sitting holding that baby boy. And it said that the town is now abuzz that Naomi has a son again. You start the story, the word Naomi means beautiful. When she comes back from Moab, she said, "Don't call me Naomi, call me Mara. Call me the bitter one." Okay, soap opera. I'm bitter at God, I'm angry at God. But then when the story ends, we're back to beautiful again. And it's a reminder that there's an eternal component. And maybe this is the hardest one for us, probably for every group of people. But we want things now, don't we? And it's got to be about me. I mean, what else could it be about? Right? I mean, God really created the universe for me. Right? Now, you wouldn't say that. But inside, that's how we feel. What if the reason you're here as a Christ follower today, what if the reason that you are a Christian is for what God's going to do with your grandchild or your great-grandchild? Wouldn't that be a kicker? So what's my job here? Yeah, you're just a pawn, man. I'm using you now, but my real plans are for your great-grandchildren. Who knows what God's up to? Don't let somebody else tell you what God's doing in your life. You just be faithful to God in the middle of the soap opera. Does that make sense to anybody? Let's watch the rest of this. Let's see the rest of the video.
Johanna is doing fantastic now. She's a healthy 2-year-old. Extremely active. She doesn't walk anywhere. She runs. She loves to climb. She climbs on everything. She's so curious. She gets into everything. She's discovered how to vocalize and that words mean something. And so now she's using her words as loudly and as often as she can. We just had our last cardiology follow-up right at the end of September. And they said, everything looks perfect, and in fact, we'd be okay if you just want to come back in a year. And so, you know, now we have a living testimony in our house, a testament to God, and God has a plan for her. You know, and all of this that happened, God's going to use it. There's a plan there.
I don't know what the plan is, but it's going to be something amazing.
Sometimes God works things out here. Sometimes he works it out when we get into heaven. But it always works out by chapter 4. And that's the beauty of God's word. Listen, I don't know what you're living through right now. But the whole point of this is to understand that Jesus has stepped into our mess to show his love for each one of us. There's a story. In fact, I actually have a picture of the couch. There was two college guys that went to buy a used couch. Can you guys relate to that? They bought a used couch for $20. And inside the couch, they found $40,000 in cash. It also had a deposit slip that a 91-year-old woman had filled out to take her money to the bank. Now, you could ask the question why a 91-year-old woman had $40,000 in cash. I don't know if she's a drug dealer. I don't know. I don't know what was going on there. But anyway, as the story goes, the boys took the money back to the woman. She gave him a reward. It's a great story. But I wonder if we see Jesus as that great prize, if we really understand what a find that we have in him. In the midst of my soap opera, Jesus found me, and Jesus came to rescue me and to rescue you. So if you've not accepted Jesus, we're going to give you that opportunity. But here's the story I want to finish with. They did a survey. They threw money on the ground and videotaped people to see how much money it would take to get people to bend over and pick it up. They started with pennies, nickels, dimes. All right, I pick up everything. I don't know about you, but anyway. They said that for most of us, it took a quarter. For most of us, most people would walk by the penny, the nickel, and the dime. But if it was a quarter, we'd stop and pick it up. So then they ran the numbers and they said, so what would that look like to Bill Gates? What would Bill Gates stop for? $40,000. So if Bill's walking down the road and he sees $39,500, he's not going to bother. You know what I'm saying? Here's the fact. Jesus came and died for you. The question is, will you stop long enough to pick him up and accept what he's done for you?